This week on Making Contact.
I've come to believe that this isn't illegal anymore, a war, and that the order to have us deployed to Iraq is unlawful, and I won't participate in something that I believe is wrong.
I was begging him not to go. He had friends who were asking him to break their legs so that they wouldn't have to deploy, and I didn't think he should be over there.
Imagine for a moment your life and your future at risk. You join the U.S. military to serve your country, to receive an education, and to make a life for yourself. Now the President of the United States is conducting what many people believe is an illegal war based on misinformation, manufactured evidence, and political lies. And you are one of those people. What do you do? On this edition, we hear from several U.S. soldiers who made a choice to put their futures on the line. First by joining the U.S. military, and next by refusing to fight the war in Iraq. Dissenters or deserters? I'm Tina Rubio, your host on Making Contact, a program connecting people, battle ideas, and important information. It's possible to think about history as a series of conflicts, larger-than-life, grandiose confrontations between good and evil. Life, justice, and morality, they all hang in the balance. And it's not always clear which side is in the right. A large portion of the U.S. believes school desegregation was an impossible, and for many, an unwanted idea in 1954. In the early 20th century, women in the U.S. were thrown into prison for demanding the right to vote. While these conflicts were at their core about issues, they were ultimately fought by individual people. People who had their own idea of the kind of life they want to live and of the things they stood for. People who were willing to sacrifice their reputation, their freedom, even their lives, for an idea. Making Contact Sarah Olson brings us one of those stories.
U.S. Army First Lieutenant Aaron Watada was born and raised in Hawaii. He grew up in a good family. His mom is a high school guidance counselor, and his dad, now retired, worked with a state campaign spending commission. He was good at sports, and he was a Boy Scout. Watada joined the military in 2003, just before the Iraq War started. He's a patriot. He's also well-educated and clean-cut. In a lot of ways, Lieutenant Watada is the perfect Army officer.
2003, that was a couple years after the terrorist attacks on 9/11. And I think a lot of people, we had the idea of that a country needed us and that we needed to serve our country. And so that was one of the reasons why I joined, was because of that patriotism, you could say. A lot of people, probably like myself, join the military because they love their country and they love what it stands for.
Inspired by duty and patriotism, Lieutenant Watada did basic training in the summer of 2003. By 2004, he was on his way to Korea, where he spent a year overseas. When he returned to the U.S., Lieutenant Watada was assigned to the 1st Striker Brigade out of Fort Lewis, Washington. Shortly after that, he got notice that his unit would go to Iraq.
And when they told me I was going to deploy, I was like, okay, all right, well, let's go. And then I'm going to start training for it, and I'll start training the guys under me to go, and I'll do that to the best of my ability.
What happened next was probably a surprise to everyone, his parents, his commanding officers, the men who reported to him, even to Lieutenant Watada himself.
Some people would call it an epiphany, but it was sort of a slow transition. I realized that to go to war, it would be best to educate myself in every way possible on why we were going to that particular war and what were just the effects of war in general and the consequences of soldiers going to war and coming back home. So I began reading, and when I reached a particular book, it was James Bamford's book, A Pretext for War. And after I was going through that, I remember I was on a training exercise and I was reading it during my downtime. And after, I don't think I had even finished the whole thing. And after I read certain things on how he was detailing the level of deception that the Bush administration had used to initiate this war and process this war, I was shocked. And there was a point where I just became ashamed of, you know, wearing the uniform. I was thinking, you know, how can we wear this, something that is such a time-honored tradition, knowing that we waged war that was based basically on I don't know, some people will call it misrepresentation, some people will call it lies. But whatever it was, I think, a betrayal of the trust of the American people, and definitely the military and the soldiers.
Carolyn Ho is Lieutenant Watada's mother. She says when her son told her he was considering refusing orders to go to Iraq, she panicked.
And I tried to talk him out of it and to look at other alternatives. And I said, you know, I realize I love you so much. I don't want anything to happen to you. And I didn't want you to face ridicule and shame, embarrassment, a ruined career, being labeled for the rest of your life as a seditionist. I said, I myself would do what you're doing. And initially, I didn't want you to do it. I didn't want you to go through it.
But Lieutenant Watada had already made up his mind. He says he knew early on he wasn't just trying to avoid going to Iraq. He actually wanted to stop the war. He's convinced that it violates the U.S. Constitution and international law. He says it's illegal and immoral, and as an officer, it's his duty to refuse illegal orders. But telling his parents was no easy task.
You know, I had to tell them, and it's not about just trying to make sure that you're safe. It's something that when you, I guess, you know, are looking your children in your eye in the future, or you're, you know, at the end of your life or looking on your deathbed, you want to look back on your life and think that, well, you know, while there was a lot of, you know, missteps and things like that, and I haven't lived the perfect life, that at a very important part in my life, when I had the opportunity to make the right decision, that I did so, knowing that there were, you know, negative consequences.
Robert Watada is the lieutenant's father. Although he, too, was afraid of the negative consequences, he supports his son politically. He says he's always been impressed not only by his son's moral compass and sense of integrity, but also his determination and tenacity.
I guess he got it from his mother. I'm not sure. He took an oath to protect and support and defend the Constitution of the United States the Army against all foreign and domestic threats to the Constitution. And that's what he's upholding. We have people who have committed very egregious war crimes. And he simply said, I don't want to be a part of that. And I'm very proud of him for taking that kind of stand.
Having convinced his family that resisting the Iraq war was the right thing to do, Lieutenant Watada now needed a course of action.
I think the deciding moment for me, I had watched, I guess, it's not really publicized in the news, but you know, you see these clips of the funerals of these families and the children, and the mothers and the fathers as they sit by the grave or they come out of the funerals. I think one really hard picture for me was the little boy walking out of the funeral for his father who was killed. He can't even face the camera, so he's covering his eyes. I just felt like that I couldn't watch that anymore, that I wasn't going to be silent anymore and condone what I felt was something that was deeply wrong.
In January of 2006, Lieutenant Watada told his commanding officer that he would refuse to go to Iraq, and his commanding officer told him to think it over. It was, after all, a big decision.
I took about maybe a week, and then he said, well, we need to know what you're going to do, because if you're not going to go, we need to talk to the battalion commander. So the next day I said, okay, I made my decision. I've come to believe that this is an illegal and immoral war and that the order to have us deployed to Iraq is unlawful, that I won't follow it and I won't participate in something that I believe is wrong.
And on June 22nd, 2006, Aaron Watada became the first commissioned officer to publicly refuse to deploy to Iraq, an act that launched him into the national spotlight and the center of the anti-war movement. He also faces a possible court-martial and prison sentence. Support for his action has poured in from around the globe. Anne Wright is a 29-year retired colonel. She also served in the U.S. State Department for nearly 15 years. She served 8 administrations before she resigned in 2003 in protest of the Iraq War. She knows all too well what a hard road Lieutenant Watada has chosen.
Well, the military is a very organized unit that brooks very little dissent. And when you have anyone who stands up to say, no, I will not do something that they're ordered to do, It causes great waves in the military because most people go along. And here you have a lieutenant who is saying, I believe the war that the president of the United States started is illegal. I will not commit a crime. So I think it's a very noble path that he's chosen, but it's a very hard path.
Of course, not everyone thinks Lieutenant Watada has chosen a noble path. Plenty of people, inside and outside of the military, have called him a coward and a traitor.
There's nothing cowardly about choosing a hard path. In fact, sometimes it's more cowardly just to go along. Just to go along, and no matter what anybody tells you to do, you go ahead and do it. The brave thing is to look at what's happening and to honestly evaluate what it is. And if you in your own mind make a decision that this is a wrong act, an immoral act, an illegal act, and you stand up, then that's courageous. That's not being cowardly.
There's also the question of Lieutenant Watada's contract with the Army, his obligation to the oath he took.
A lot of people say, oh, well, you signed the contract, so you got to go whether you like it or not. But in a contract, there's two parties. And yes, I signed the contract and I said that, you know, I will follow orders and I will go and do what I'm told to do. And there's times where, you know, I won't be able to question it and evaluate the legality of everything. And so I have to have the ultimate trust in my leader, in my president, and his subordinates to do the right thing for us, to do the right thing by us, and to sacrifice our lives if need be for only, you know, justified and moral reasons. I think that knowing or realizing what the president has done in taking us to a war or leading us into a war that he misled us about has broken that bond of trust that we had. I guess realizing what the president done and what he continues to do is something that I can't be silent about anymore.
Lieutenant Watada says he feels more resolute than ever. He says he's happy with his decision and confident he made the right choice.
You know, I am opposed to this war and the misconduct within this administration, and I'm willing to sacrifice my freedom and my good name and be willing to take on the wrath of many people out there because of these beliefs. And that is my personal sacrifice to hopefully end this war a lot sooner and bring these troops home and save some lives, both Iraqi and American.
For now, Lieutenant Watada is confined to the Fort Lewis Army Base. His communication is restricted, and he's awaiting court-martial. He hopes his action will inspire others.
What are you willing to personally sacrifice if you believe that this war is wrong, that we need to end it immediately or within the very near future, that you want to support the troops and bring them home alive?
For Making Contact, I'm Sarah Olson, Fort Lewis, Washington.
And while some praise Lieutenant Aaron Watada's decision to refuse deployment to Iraq, others, both inside and outside the military, condemn it. One such group, Military Family Voice of Victory Organization, a nonpartisan group made up of military families and veterans who support the war. Recently, MFVV issued a statement criticizing Lieutenant Watada, calling him a coward and a traitor. They want Lieutenant Watada to be prosecuted. Making Contact, Stefana Petrova asked MFVV's co-founder Rebecca Davis about the statement.
He swore an oath. Not an oath is to political convenience. He did speak up that he would be willing to go to Afghanistan, but not Iraq. You don't swear an oath to serve just for a war that you agree with. And also his statements that people lied in order to bring us to war, we don't really agree with.
People typically criticize Lieutenant Watada for refusing to deploy to Iraq and allowing other soldiers to fight in his place. But he says that he fully supports the troops and believes he's fulfilling his duty to his colleagues and other soldiers by trying to end the war in Iraq so that no more American lives are lost. What's your response to that?
I'm fully convinced it's just going to cause more American lives to be lost. His dissent is being used by Al Jazeera. It's being used by the insurgency. And he's probably going to cost more lives than he is by saving. This isn't going to end the war. This isn't going to stop that. All he's doing is giving fodder to the people who are actually telling our troops. He's giving them good PR.
If you don't accept what he says his motivation is to be the truth, then what do you think his motives are behind his decision to descend?
Political. He's speaking the rhetoric of political groups that have a long history of being anti-American.
Do you think his decision is to impact and influence other troops that are to deploy in Iraq?
Well, I haven't heard him say that. I think he thinks that he's being a leader in an anti-war movement. But, you know, I know plenty of troops. I'm the mother of several of them. They are not happy with what he's doing.
Do you believe that Lieutenant Watada's refusal to serve in Iraq will further encourage al-Qaeda's war against America and Western civilization, is how you put it?
Yeah.
Could you explain more about that position? How do you see the connection, the relation between those two?
If you read Al Jazeera and if you listen to the tapes being put out, they depend a lot on the anti-war movement. Zarqawi actually depended a lot on us leaving, much like we did in Vietnam. That's been mentioned over and over again by both Osama bin Laden, Zarqawi, and Zawahiri, is that we will never stay the course and finish what we started. So when people dissent like this, this encourages them, and they use it for rhetoric, and it costs more lives.
You have three sons who are currently serving or have served in Iraq and Afghanistan. If they were to refuse to serve in future U.S. operations because of their beliefs, would you still insist on prosecution to the fullest extent in that case?
If they had tried to get a conscientious objector due to religious reasons, I could probably be more amicable to what they stood for. But as for political purposes like this, no, I would not support my sons doing that.
Would you support them being prosecuted under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, as you're
insisting
now?
Yes, I would.
That was Rebecca Davis, co-founder of Military Family Voice of Victory Organization. We'll have more in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information, or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. The Pentagon reports nearly 6,000 U.S. soldiers have gone AWOL since the Iraq War began, many heading to Canada to seek political refuge and freedom from military prosecutors. The actual number of how many have crossed the border into Canada remains unclear, but so far, it's relatively small in comparison to the tens of thousands of young American men who fled north during the Vietnam War. And times have changed. Canada doesn't provide the same safe haven that it once offered for Vietnam soldiers and draftees. But as Making Contact's Sujatha Day finds, U.S. soldiers are finding support from some key allies in our neighbor to the north.
The Today Cafe in Toronto's East End is far from the place in California where Private Ryan Johnson comes from. He and his wife Jenna came to Canada in June of 2005. They're both applying for refugee status in Canada. Private Johnson grew up in Visalia, an agricultural area in California's Central Valley. There, the work is tough and the pay is poor. It was Jenna's idea that her husband join the army. She saw an ad in the paper recruiting soldiers and thought this could be their ticket to a better future. Jenna says recruiters assured Private Johnson that he would not go to war, rather he'd work in non-combat jobs. But as it turned out, that wasn't the case. His unit was to be deployed to Iraq, to the Al-Mamadiyah base. He and his wife were devastated.
I was really upset. I was begging him not to go. He had friends who were asking him to break their legs so that they wouldn't have to deploy, and I didn't think he should be over there.
But Private Johnson says going to the war just wasn't an option.
It was the most difficult decision I've ever made in my entire life. I mean, it was a life-changing decision, not just for me, but for my entire family. I mean, anyone that I contacted and told them that I would be deserting could be considered aiding desertion, which is punishable with up to 3 years in prison. My wife was automatically considered guilty in aiding desertion. You know, me, like, I was having problems with work before. You know, felony arrest doesn't really help that.
So he packed up his belongings and headed toward Toronto to avoid service in the Iraq War.
At that point, there's a federal warrant for our arrest. I'm driving in my vehicle that's registered to me. The military has all my information, so if I'd gotten pulled over for speeding, or they just decided they were going to run my license plate because one of my taillights was out, they would know that I had deserted the military and there's a federal arrest for warrant for me. So I was very scared driving across the United States. We didn't have proper documentation to leave the United States. So, I mean, if they had actually checked our identification, then we could have been in a lot of trouble.
Private Johnson is certainly not alone. 3 decades ago, tens of thousands of soldiers fled to Canada to escape service in what they believe was an unjust war.
American draft dodgers draw cheers as they arrive to take their place in the march. Stopping for traffic lights.
It's 1970. People are protesting the Vietnam War. Draft cards are being burned. Marches are being organized. The anti-war movement has never been so strong. Its youth are unstoppable. Lee Zavslowski is a 26-year-old soldier, and he's just been told that he's going to Vietnam. Like many others, he applies for residency in Canada, hoping not to go to war. During the 1970s, Canada accepted between 30 to 100,000 draft dodgers and about 1,000 deserters.
Yes, this is my daughter.
Okay, wow. Yeah.
Zavslowski is now 62 years old. He shows me his identification dog tag from Vietnam. Zavslowski is a Toronto activist, organizer, and full participant in Canadian life. He's also helping a new generation of U.S. soldiers trying to avoid going to war in Iraq. He said he and fellow draft dodger and lawyer Jeffrey House are part of the War Resisters Support Campaign, and campaign helping U.S. soldiers seek asylum in Canada.
There's a lot of resonance for me in it. They're doing very much the same thing that I did. I was in the Army, and I did desert because I believed the war was wrong. And I came to a country that I think I might have visited once before, but I wasn't really very familiar with. I've never regretted my decision for one moment.
According to the Pentagon, at least 6,000 soldiers have gone AWOL since the beginning of the Iraq War more than 3 years ago. It's estimated that about 150 U.S. soldiers refuse to deploy each month. And right now, several hundred soldiers are said to be living underground in Canada. 20 are currently seeking asylum in Canada. They hope to avoid being put in jail, but they also want to get a message across that the Iraq War is unjust. The soldiers argue it's illegal and immoral to serve in a war where they're forced to commit what they say are human rights abuses and international law violations. During the Vietnam War, Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau wanted Canada to be a haven for those fleeing war. Draft dodgers simply applied for permanent residency and no questions were asked. Now there is no such policy. Getting permanent residency is much harder since many applicants are turned down, so some soldiers apply for refugee status. But the Canadian Immigration and Refugee Board has turned the applications down. Lance Corporal Chris Magwai and his Canadian wife Rhea sit at a quiet picnic table in the Dufferin Park in Toronto. He's from the Hawaiian island of Maui. The two met over the internet and married before Magwai joined the U.S. Marines. Magwai is 20 years old, Rhea 21. In training, Lance Corporal Magwai started reading about the U.N.'s opposition to the Iraq War and international law. After ample consideration, Lance Corporal Magwai refused to deploy to Iraq.
I came up with the Nuremberg Tribunal, which is enshrined in the Geneva Conventions of the United Nations Charter, which says I'm supposed to refuse all illegal orders and I'm supposed to refuse to participate in wars of aggression.
So Lance Corporal Magwai applied for permanent residency through his wife. And although he said it was one of the hardest decisions he's made, Lance Corporal Magwai says he finds the support he needs from the Vietnam veterans in Canada.
I find it different seeing Vietnam veterans, combat veterans come up here. I see draft dodgers come up here. I see a lot of people come up here, and they're all supportive.
Lance Corporal Magwai says he didn't have a lot of support from his family. He says his father was a drug dealer and his mother was always on drugs. He joined the military to get off the island, improve his life, and travel the world. And at the time, he believed in the Iraq War. He believed in the Bush administration.
Well, like I said, I was a card-holding Republican, and I believed George Bush was the man for the job, and I believed that Osama bin Laden had associations with Saddam Hussein, and I believed he had weapons of mass destruction. The 9/11 Commission says that they had no relationship. Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein had no relationship whatsoever. And weapons of mass destruction, it's been 3 years and we scoured every inch of the country. I haven't seen a single one.
A staunch Republican, he used to look down on the other AWOL soldiers. Now, he has dinner with them. So why the change of heart?
Just this last December, my unit came back from Okinawa, Japan, and our commanding officer stood in some formation and said, in September, we'll be going to the Al-Anbar province of Iraq. I was like, wow, going to Iraq. So I asked my sergeant what Iraq was like, what war was really like. The next day he brought in a picture of him lighting a cigarette off of a burning Iraqi's body. This just blew my mind away. This guy was supposed to be the most honorable man. He was a sergeant of Marines. He's supposed to lead me into battle. And I looked up to him. That made me sick.
So his next decision seemed like an obvious one.
I didn't even start to talk to my wife yet. I was just determined I was going to get out. And I came across the War Resisters website, and I started speaking to them, and I told my wife about what was going on, and then we just left.
He just kind of like went, pack up your stuff, we're leaving. I can't stay here anymore. I can't do this. I don't know what's going on, so we just packed our stuff and just put clothes on our back and drove all the way from California to here, 44 hours nonstop.
While both couples say they're happy to be in Canada, they both have mixed feelings about what they've left behind. Lance Corporal Chris Magwai.
I lost many things. I lost my only career goal that I've had in my entire life was to be an officer in the military, and I doubt that's going to happen anymore. I've lost my family and the right to visit my son, and I've lost my country.
Private Johnson, on the other hand, seems to have no regrets.
There's nothing I regret. I wish I could see my family more often. They don't really have the money to come up here and see me whenever they want because they're so far away. You know, I can't go back to my country, which isn't really that big of a deal to me considering you know, all the dirty things they're in right now. I lost respect for my country. I don't see it the same way that I always did.
Private Johnson's claim for refugee status was rejected, but he is appealing it. Lance Corporal Magwai's permanent residency application is under review. So for now, both soldiers have to wait to find out what their futures hold, and they're both heavily involved with the War Resisters Support Campaign, traveling across Canada, speaking out about their experiences to those who will listen. For Making Contact, I'm Sujatha Day, Toronto, Canada.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Dan Turner, Ronald Rucker, Yasuo Nagata, Steve Macer, and Heidi Record and Mike Lamar, who helped mix the show. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. For a CD copy of program number 2806, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736 or go to radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Dorian Taylor, communications manager, and Stefana Petrova, production intern. And I'm your host and senior producer, Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.